From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. While no one wants to sue a corporation for a wrongful act, most of us believe that such an avenue is available to us if we need it. What most of us don't know, however, is that in many cases, and tucked away in those lengthy terms of service agreements we see constantly, is a provision called forced arbitration that effectively takes away our ability to sue. And what makes this situation a double whammy for consumers is that forced arbitration is seen by some experts as deeply slanted in favor of the corporation. Today on the show, you'll meet such an expert and head of the Public Integrity Project who will explain how forced arbitration became so ubiquitous and how it can do tremendous harm to consumers already harmed by a corporation. That's next on Oregon on the Record. I'll be honest, I'm not sure I ever really paid attention and certainly didn't understand the phrase forced arbitration. I knew arbitration was a legal term, but certainly didn't really think that much about the forced part of it. I should have. And as my next guest will explain, we all need to pay attention. Brandon Ballou, a former federal prosecutor, uses those prosecutorial skills now on behalf of the public to fight corruption. One of his latest causes is helping consumers understand and fight against forced arbitration. We talk to him now. Brandon Ballou, the CEO of the Public Integrity Project, also a former federal prosecutor, and for 2 years he prosecuted rioters who attacked the Capitol on January 6th. He is also author of a book that's just been released, When Companies Run the Courts, Forced Arbitration and America's Secret Justice System. Brandon, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'd love to start with a very simple question to define for our audience. What is forced arbitration, and how does it differ from simple arbitration?
It's a great question, and I'm so glad you made that distinction. So forced arbitration is an alternative to the public justice system, where instead of having your case decided by a judge or a jury in public proceedings that can be appealed, your case is decided by a private judge called an arbitrator. That is often paid for by the very company that you're trying to sue if you're a consumer or an employee. Now, unsurprisingly, when one side is effectively the employer of the judge, that side typically wins. And it's not just that forced arbitration is biased towards one side, these big corporate defendants. It's also that proceedings occur in secret and that they can almost never be appealed. And so when you combine those, you have a system where consumers and employees frequently almost always tend to lose, where that's really not the case in our regular court system. Now, you asked about the distinction between forced arbitration and simple arbitration, regular arbitration. The difference is whether or not a person can consent to it. So, you know, what I just described, an alternative to the public justice system with simpler procedures, you know, maybe less overhead, can make a lot of sense in a lot of circumstances, you know. Complicated business disputes, which both sides agree to, or custody proceedings and things like that. When I talk about forced arbitration, I'm talking about the agreements that you sign with your employer or with the companies that you buy from, often in those click-to-accept agreements that you have no power to control or to negotiate. And it's those contracts, those forced arbitration agreements, that I believe are making life so unfair for us as consumers and as employees.
How did it get to be so popular, the use of forced arbitration?
Well, another great question. And I'll say, you know, to the extent that people feel like companies are increasingly beyond the reach of the law, are behaving worse, are treating you worse with worse customer service and all that, scamming you more often, forced arbitration is in large part the explanation because it has really taken off in the last 15 years. There's an old law from 1925 that allows arbitration in very limited circumstances. It's called the Federal Arbitration Act in 1925. But it was really meant to promote what you're calling simple arbitration, this idea of, you know, people of roughly equal bargaining power, merchants that might have a dispute with each other, companies that might have something to fight over, to bind each other to arbitration. It was never meant to expand to control employees, to control consumers, to cover those click-to-accept contracts that we sign every day. Well, beginning in the 1980s, the Supreme Court began to expand that law, reinterpret the law ever outward to cover all those groups that we just talked about. And in the 2010s, the Supreme Court said that forced arbitration could be used to kill class actions. You know, those cases that you join when, you know, a bank harms everybody or overcharges everybody for a few dozen or a few hundred dollars, or when the same product injures or kills, you know, all the same kinds of people. What that means is that without class actions, with these forced arbitration agreements, companies are effectively beyond the reach of the law for all but the most expensive and most deadly harms. Because if you can't join a class action for something that costs, you know, costs you a few dozen or a few hundred dollars in a scam, the chances are good it's economically impossible for you to bring that case alone. And so really, forced arbitration has just expanded dramatically in the past decade or two, with the practical result that all those little scams that you feel like you're experiencing more recently can, again, largely be explained by forced arbitration.
In listening to another interview you did, I was struck by the idea that you brought up, which was we've, as Americans, been told over and over again, we're sort of a lawsuit-happy nation, and that so much suing was going on that perhaps people thought this made a certain amount of sense. Maybe break a myth or explain a myth. Are we super litigious and lawsuit crazy America is sort of one of the reasons that this happened, or is it not necessarily the case?
No, and I'm so glad you asked that. The data doesn't back it up. So let's talk about the data, and then let's talk about some specific stories. So,
okay.
You know, probably the most comprehensive study of this issue says that America really is not lawsuit crazy, or at least isn't lawsuit crazy in the way that people think. So there was a study showing that when the idea of the what we might call the litigation explosion really took off in the late 70s, early 80s, there really was a growth in federal cases, but in large part, it was driven not by people suing companies, but by the government suing people, the Reagan administration suing Social Security beneficiaries and veterans to try to claw back money that the administration said that these retirees and these people with injuries weren't owed. In fact, over that period of time, lawsuits against companies over securities cases, antitrust cases, and so forth actually declined. And to the extent that there was a growth in our litigation against big companies, it was driven overwhelmingly by lawsuits over one specific industry, one specific product, which is asbestos. So the data doesn't necessarily back up the idea that there is a litigation explosion in America, or with that we bring, you know, vastly more cases than other developed countries. And then when you think about specific stories, you know, one thing that often occurs to people is that story about the woman who spilled coffee on herself at McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, millions of dollars. It's almost sort of like a cultural meme there in the 90s and 2000s. It turns out that woman, Stella Liebeck, when she spilled coffee, got third-degree burns on her thighs, buttocks, and vagina, was in the hospital for several weeks, in treatment for several years, and tried to settle the case for just $50,000 to pay her medical bills. So it was revealed in the trial that McDonald's actually had a policy of heating its coffee very near to the actual boiling point of water, and on top of that, had settled or had received complaints at least 700 times from similarly situated people who had been allegedly burned by their coffee. So that single case was meant to try to get McDonald's to change its policy, and in fact, the amount came to, I think, just about 2 days of total coffee sales for the company. So oftentimes, these examples really collapse on further inspection. And what you find is not that we have a whole bunch of ordinary people suing companies too often, but rather the opposite, that companies too often are beyond the reach of the law for really serious harms when people are cheated or discriminated against, when products injure or even kill people. And I would just, you know, to try to synthesize that insight, you know, for your listeners, do you believe that companies aren't powerful enough right now? I think very few people think that. And if you think that, the reason that companies are so powerful right now is in large part because we have developed the law so that it is almost impossible to hold them accountable for so many wrongs that they perpetrate.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Brendan Ballou. He is the CEO of the Public Integrity Project. We're talking about forced arbitration. Your book, When Companies Run the Courts, Forced Arbitration and America's Secret Justice System. I want to hone in on that word secret, because as you've written, as you talk about, this has expanded so much, but I'm sure the vast, vast majority of people listening right now had no idea that it had grown so much. Talk about that secret way in which this has sort of become a hegemon.
Yeah, exactly. It is secret, and yet it's all pervasive. So 80% of Fortune 500 companies use forced arbitration with their consumers or with their employees. Some 60 million private sector employees are covered by forced arbitration agreements with their employers. There are more forced arbitration agreements in America than there are Americans. So the chances are good, not just that you are bound by many forced arbitration agreements with your bank, with your credit card company, with the nursing home that your parents might be in, but you're probably agreeing to forced arbitration agreements every single day. So it's all pervasive, and yet it is so hard to see. And in part that's because forced arbitration proceedings are overwhelmingly almost always in secret, which means that we never know what happens in these proceedings, unlike in an ordinary court. And the decisions from these cases are rarely, if ever, published. And so when you think about what the law is, really what the rule of law is in a democracy, it's that you have public published proceedings so that similar cases can be treated similarly. We don't have that enforced arbitration. All of this occurs in the shadows, and as a result, the law really doesn't develop. It really isn't a law at all. Instead, what we have is individual arbitrators making unreviewable decisions that we almost never know about. And so while it surrounds us, it is also extremely hard to know what's happening in it.
Well, let's talk about a case that many people might have heard of. It is terrifying in some aspects. The woman who dined at a Disney restaurant at a theme park and had a terrible allergic reaction. Pick up the story from there so people can really understand how far this can go.
Yeah. So Jeffrey Piccolo and his wife, Tanakporn Kangswan, were eating at a Disney restaurant. She had severe allergies. As was subsequently alleged, they repeatedly asked the wait staff if the food was safe. They were repeatedly assured that it was. It was not. And she died of an allergic reaction. But when Mr. Piccolo tried to sue for wrongful death, Disney tried to compel him into arbitration, arguing that he had agreed to arbitrate this dispute because, among other things, he had signed a Disney Plus account with the company several years earlier. And it seems kind of astounding, this idea that by signing up for a streaming service, you give up the right to sue over your wife's wrongful death. And yet, to be clear, the law was almost certainly on Disney's side there. There is case after case of seemingly unrelated arbitration agreements compelling people to arbitrate their disputes over everything from racial discrimination to the murder of somebody's son, because they have signed these sorts of click-to-accept agreements. Now, in that particular case, Disney backed down because the press was so overwhelmingly bad for the company. But again, to be clear, Disney probably would have won that case, or at least won the case into getting it into arbitration. So that's how the law has developed here.
Wow. So I imagine some people listening right now would say, okay, well, then I'll just opt out of forced arbitration when I sign up for cellular service or something like that. Talk about that as a strategy, putting this on the consumer.
Yeah, well, it's entirely understandable, and it's not going to work. Most of these agreements that you're signing are click-to-accept agreements. You have no ability to, cross out a section of the agreement that you don't like. And the challenge, when they offer opt-out provisions for these arbitration agreements, they're incredibly onerous. They require you to mail in a letter, jump through these various hoops. Think about how many agreements you probably signed today, on the course of these websites. Are you willing to do this 4 or 5 times a day? Probably not. So if we're going to solve the problem of forced arbitration, it is going to be through legislation. Now, I don't think Congress or this president is particularly interested in solving this problem. The president has used forced arbitration in his own life many times. Instead, it's going to happen at the state and local level. I have model legislation on my personal website. You can just Google my name and download it. Send it to your state representative or city council member. What we can do is we can make arbitration, when people are stuck in it, more fair and more transparent. And we can have ways that people can avoid arbitration entirely. So we can solve this problem, but we're not going to solve it alone. We're going to have to solve it together through collective action.
I do want to switch gears, because there's another thing you're involved in that I think people are taking a tremendous interest in. I forget what the name of it is, but when the Trump administration, when President Trump dropped the lawsuit and somehow, some way, was able to create what your organization is calling a slush fund, talk about what you and your organization are doing to try and, in your mind, rectify this situation.
Yeah. So, you know, just to remind your listeners, the president has created a $1.8 billion slush fund that will be used to pay potentially his own businesses, various associates, but most importantly, rioters, militias, and paramilitary groups that attacked the Capitol on January 6th. We are representing two January 6th officers who defended the Capitol that day and who are continuing to speak out to make sure that January 6th isn't forgotten or its history rewritten, and who continue to receive death threats from the very people who may be getting money from this president. This creates a very real danger for our clients, which is why they have to bring suit. And on top of that, the slush fund itself is almost blindingly illegal. There are so many ways that it violates the law. So we've brought suit just last week, and we hope to act quickly to make sure that this fund does not disperse money to people who might threaten or kill people like our clients, and to make sure that the fund itself is disbanded.
You're just joining us. We're talking with Brendan Ballou. He is the CEO of the Public Integrity Project. We're talking about forced arbitration. From a legal perspective, I know a lot of people are wondering, how could this happen? How can a president sue his own government and then somehow, through dropping the lawsuit, get seemingly unrestricted funds?
Well, it's a great question, and the short answer is he can't. For the Department of Justice to settle a case, there needs to be what lawyers call a case or controversy. There actually needs to be a dispute between the two sides. That wasn't the case here. Donald Trump sued his own Internal Revenue Service over the disclosure of his tax returns, alleged $10 billion in damages, and then proposed to settle the case. It is functionally a sham settlement agreement that the Department of Justice cannot settle. But even if it could, the Department of Justice cannot use the fiction of a settlement to functionally create a new government department or agency. You know, this is not a situation where, you know, my colleague Sam has this great analogy. He says, you know, Barack Obama couldn't use the fiction of a lawsuit to create the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Republicans probably wouldn't like that. And nobody should like that this president seems to be creating a new department that he controls, that he can functionally control who will sit on it and where the money will go, all without congressional authorization. And so it's very clear that this is a slush fund that violates the law, and we're hoping to get it invalidated.
Okay. Brendan, my last question for you, I'm going to go back to forced arbitration for a second here. You talked about some model legislation that you've drafted. Give us a sense of what that legislation could look like. And are there certain states that are taking this up as we speak?
Yes. So there have been a couple states that have been real leaders on this. California is one of them. And they really do two things. One is, for the people that are going to be stuck in arbitration, it makes it so that the arbitration process itself is going to be a little bit more fair. People can, you know, do investigations, get what lawyers call discovery, take depositions and so forth, essentially build a case for themselves, and also have more transparency such that, you know, people can actually figure out how arbitrators have ruled in the past so they can see if they're going to get a fair shake or not. But the real innovation is that California has allowed employees who have been stiffed by their employers to bring suits, not on their own behalf, because they're often bound by arbitration agreements with their employers, but by on behalf of the state government, which isn't bound by an arbitration agreement. The state says, you can enforce our state labor laws. If you win, you get a cut. The state gets a little bit of a cut too. That means that people can functionally circumvent these arbitration agreements and bring cases where they otherwise couldn't. We need legislation like that, not just in California, but in all states. And we need it not just for employment disputes about whether or not people are getting paid, but also all those consumer protection and discrimination, antitrust, environmental statutes, so that if a company harms you, hurts you, injures you, kills somebody that you love, you can sue and aren't trapped in the secret justice system.
He's Brendan Ballou, CEO of the Public Integrity Project, and he's also written the book When Companies Run the Courts, Forced Arbitration, and America's Secret Justice System. Mr. Ballou, really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. It could be the worst industrial accident in Washington state history, and Monday on the show, we'll get an update from our OPB colleague about the deadly Longview paper mill disaster. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.